Today on Rambling About Cars, we climb behind the wheel to talk about the best and the worst cars we drove in 2021. And we have some special guests to help us out with that because Bruce and I kind of didn't drive that much different. We also have to talk about North American Car Truck of the Year Awards, which may or may not tie into best and worst. And then we also have to talk about Tokyo Auto Salon, an electric Subaru STI. I don't know if that's going to tie in best and worst, but without further ado, it's podcast time. I'm Christopher Smith, and you know Mr. Chris Bruce.
Yeah, welcome everybody. So we received the recommendation from a boss that I should have a more exciting background, so I'm trying it for a week. So if you like seeing stuff behind me,
I love the bar graph or whatever that is on the wall.
Oh, it's a fake subway map. Anyway, getting to our guests. We have got Clint Simone, who is Motor One's director of video, and we've got Jeff Perez, who is a senior editor at Motor One. And real quick off the bat, please comment, please like, please subscribe. That's the big one right now. We're going for subscribers. So if you haven't subscribed and you're listening to this somewhere, subscribe. I don't care where it is. If it's Facebook, if it's Spotify, if it's Google Podcasts, if it's YouTube, subscribe.
You can subscribe on Facebook?
Yeah, you can. You can subscribe to our channel on Facebook.
Well, you can follow, but is it called follow or subscribe?
It's probably called follow, but it's the same.
I might be getting a little off track here already. Jeff, Clint.
This is well done, you guys. Thank you.
You guys have both been on the show before. Thanks so much for coming back. And I've been really excited to have the two of you together because I think this is going to be a really good back and forth conversation. Before we do the really good stuff, we should probably talk about North American Car Truck of the Year Awards because they just came out today as of our recording.
As of our recording, yeah. I'll be popping that up now. But so car, utility, and truck are the categories as always. Mm-hmm. And I know Jeff at least has some opinions. Why don't you get the ball rolling here for us?
Well, so if you've seen my Twitter mentions today, a lot of people have been in my comments sort of asking about, I guess we should start by saying the winners, right?
So Civic won best car. Probably a good idea.
That probably makes the most sense. So Civic won best car, Ford Maverick won best truck, and then Bronco won best utility. So two awards for Ford, one for Honda. I think this is the second year in a row that Ford has doubled up on awards.
It is, yeah. Last year was F-150 and Mach-E.
Yeah. That's right. So, yeah, I mean, listen, the Bronco is great. The Maverick is great. The Bronco was our best off-road
adventure vehicle.
Best adventure vehicle in the Motor One Star Awards. So
yes,
that's great. My issue, I guess, was with the Civic. And I don't know if Clint will disagree with me on this because he's a big Civic guy. But it was going up against the Lucid Air, which, you know, obviously crazy expensive, crazy luxury EV. There's a huge price gap there. But I think the issue was more that the innovation is so insanely impressive with the Lucid, the range, the powertrain, the battery, the interior. It's straight up one of the fastest cars I've ever ridden in, like supercars and everything. It's insane. Whereas the Civic is sort of just like an update, and it's still a great little car, but there was nothing super innovative about it that made me feel like it was totally deserving of that award.
Is there, so hearing that, my immediate question is there an argument for accessibility? The Lucid, at least what is available now, is a six-figure vehicle. You know, prices are for the Dream Edition, it's like 130, 140, something like that. Whereas a Civic is actually less expensive than the average vehicle on the road right now, new, at least in base form. Obviously, you can get nicer. Is there an argument that the Civic, that price for pound for price or price for feature, however you want to say it, that the Civic is doing more?
Yes, I would say no, and I would also say that I don't even think it's the best car in its class because when we did best value for Motor One Star Awards, we voted the Elantra Hybrid as the best value over the Civic and over the Volkswagen Taos, which three great little vehicles, but you're not, like I said, the Civic isn't really innovating or doing anything differently that it didn't already do last year or it hasn't already done for the past 10 years, right? It's just a good car. So when you compare that to the Lucid, which is just this super impressive thing, it's like, sure, you could do the price argument all day, but even then you could have the Elantra, you could have the Taos, you could have something totally different in that segment that's just as good, if not better than the Civic, beat it out. So I don't really buy that argument. And that's been a big argument in my Twitter mentions, like I said.
Okay. Real quick, other thing we didn't mention is that the third car that was a finalist was the Volkswagen GTI and Golf R. Oh, they kind of lumped those together. That won Motor One Star Awards for best performance car. Is there, Clint, Jeff, is there any argument that the GTI or Golf R should have been car of the year?
No. It's a great car to drive. But when you work into user experience, the modern Volkswagens have a tough time with it. And, you know, I'd be the first to agree with that as somebody who was thrilled that GTI won performance car of the year for us. But yeah, no, not at all. Not in the slightest.
I'm actually super surprised that it made it as a finalist when you look at like the US, the G70, like those are better cars, I think.
Well, you Clint, know, if the, memory serves me, didn't you have a very, very notable gripe about just like some of the basic just functionality of the Volkswagen? Was that you?
Yeah, the problem, I mean, the GTI is the best car in the world. The problem is it's just not the best car in the world. I love it with all my heart, but that's from an enthusiast standpoint. And when you're putting on your hat to actually recommend a car to people to live with every day and use and enjoy, there's a lot of issues with Volkswagens. At least the current generation of Volkswagens, one generation back, which happens to be the car that I bought, the Mark 7 generation GTI was flawless and will go down as one of the greatest cars of all time. But the Civic versus Lucid situation is interesting to me. I haven't driven the Lucid. And if there's anybody on the Lucid PR team, you know my frustration. You make me sad. But we're trying to figure that out soon. We'll actually have some really exciting stuff coming up with our partners over at Inside EVs, driving the Lucid more in depth. I love the Honda Civic. I love that car to death. I think they've made some really thoughtful changes to it. South of $30,000, that is the best car in the world, I'd say. I really do. I think it's the Elantra is the Elantra hybrid does better gas mileage, but overall there's more refinement to me with how the Civic drives, and you're not offended looking at it in your driveway, as to where the Elantra is questionable at best.
Okay,
interesting takes. Can I jump
in? It didn't bother me that much that this won. I thought it was a good pick.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it didn't really bother me that much either. I haven't driven it. My thing with Lucid is, I mean, Clint, you were saying, you know, hey, I would love to drive it. You know what? I bet a lot of people would love to drive it, and almost nobody will, because it's a six-figure car from a brand new startup company that honestly nobody really knows anything about yet. I don't know how, I mean, as much as some people may hate to admit it, and I'm not talking about you, Jeff, because you're cool, but I mean, there's value in equity and brand equity, right? And nobody knows anything about Lucid. It's a great car. We might find in like a year, they just spontaneously blow up for no reason whatsoever. You know, there's no history there. Where you look at the Civic, I mean, there's a really, really strong argument that says the Civic and like the Cub are the vehicles that built Honda to what it is, right? So when you have a new model out like that that clicks all the right buttons, I would have been very, very surprised if Lucid had won. It's great. It seems great, but it's a brand new company we don't know anything about. It's a very exclusive car that very few people are going to get. Civic. That's what everybody drives.
I guess my argument against that would be it's the car of the year, not of the century, right? Or of the last few decades. I think if you took the Honda badges off, you took the nameplate off, and it was a, let's just say it was a little Ford compact, would we be having the same argument? Would it even be a semi-finalist? I don't even know if that's the case. I think Honda and the Civic have such prestige and have such history in this segment that they're almost immediately going to be a contender every year. And it's a great car. Like, I'm not arguing that it's not a great car, but it's not innovating or interesting or exciting in a time where we like really need that. And we're seeing a lot of that from other manufacturers.
Lucid should be acknowledged for the technological achievements that they are bringing to the market. Their tech, their powertrain, their battery, how fast you can charge it, how far you can drive it are, you know, they're checkpoints for the rest of the industry to catch up to in a lot of ways. I think the caveat is you have to pay $120,000-ish to get into that.
And you have to find, I think, because, you know, their dealer network is not anything like Honda or Ford is. So,
right.
Yeah, I understand, like, Lucid deserves a lot of credit for what they're doing with this car, but I guess it just doesn't surprise me all that much that it fell just short. And the scoring that's published between the judges, it was actually a pretty big discrepancy between the Civic and the Lucid. It really wasn't close. The Civic ran away with the category.
Well, Jeff, you mentioned if the Civic had a Ford badge on it, would it have won? And that's a perfect segue.
Probably the answer is yes, because that would have been a three-peat, right?
Yeah.
Well, they don't make cars anymore.
Right. Nope. Well, yeah. Nope.
But going on to the truck category, Ford did win that. They won it with the Maverick. They were going up against the Hyundai Santa Cruz and the Rivian R1T. And I'll give my opinion on this real quick. I was shocked the Rivian didn't win. From every
I agree with you there.
That is just a silver bullet of a truck. That it just does everything right. And I was kind of surprised that, you know, the Maverick took it. That was interesting.
Oh, Bruce. I know I'm the minority here. I should also point out that of everybody today on the Motor1.com team, I was the one that got all three of these correct.
No. You didn't, though. You did point.
I did, but then you people swayed me to think they can't not have an EV, so I had to change at the very last minute, but my instinct was correct. Yes. My argument for Rivian is the same as Lucid. You have a startup with a very, very high-dollar vehicle that very, very few people are going to drive. What kind of dealer network do you have supporting it? Meanwhile, you have the Maverick, which starts at $21,000 after your destination fees. That's a mass market vehicle with good mass market appeal. And that matters. Otherwise we'd all be saying, like, you know, the latest Koenigsegg is like the coolest. It's the best car of the year just because it's freaking amazing. But I mean, you have to think in a broader term here.
I think that's a fair point. Just real quick, I think the fact that a hybrid powertrain is this base powertrain on the Maverick is kind of noteworthy, and the fact that it gets, is it 38 MPG? It's something.
No, it's almost 50.
Is it 50? Okay?
Yeah, it does really well. It's way better in the city than it is on the highway because of the of the hybrid setup. But yeah, I mean that's my argument against Rivian and Lucid. Not that they're not great vehicles, but I mean they're brand new in the market, and they're pretty exclusive, even if they weren't so, you know, priced the way they are. I mean, I'm in Western South Dakota. Where am I going to go to get a Lucid? Where am I going to go to get a Rivian? I'm not going to go anywhere. Where am I going to go to get a Maverick about 3 miles away to the dealership? You know?
Yeah, I understand that. The Rivian has a bit of the Lucid going on with it. Is, you know, $70,000 midsize truck. That's expensive any way you slice it, but it's also ahead of its peers. People are already comparing it to what will be a Lightning, what will be the Silverado. But remember the sizing of that truck. It's ahead of what will be the EV Tacoma, the EV Ranger from Ford. Mm-hmm. So it's way out ahead of the game. And yes, it's expensive, but it's also paving the way for what will be a huge segment. So it does deserve a major hat tip there that it's not a giant piece of crap because it's the first car that company has made. So yeah, that one actually did surprise me. I would have thought that the Rivian would have taken this home based on what we know it can do. But at the same time, the car right in front of us, the Maverick, I think that is pretty much the vehicle of the year across all categories for a lot of the reasons that Chris Smith laid out. It's efficient as all hell. It's enough truck for most Americans. And the pricing is incredible. It makes me sad that dealers are marking them up 10 grand left and right. But out of the box, the pricing is fantastic.
Yeah, it's the Rivian I thought would win. I think it's really interesting. It's really cool. It's going to be really interesting to see what Rivian does down the line with their other products. But I'm not surprised or mad to see the Maverick. I love the Maverick. The Maverick's such a great little truck. Super affordable, super efficient. It does genuine truck stuff. You can. It has a usable bed, unlike the Santa Cruz that I've got in my driveway right now. it's awesome. It's a great little truck, so I'm not surprised by that.
So that's interesting. You, because the Santa Cruz was the other finalist, so you have a Santa Cruz right now. Mm. Compare the two. Compare driving a Maverick to a Santa Cruz.
Oh, man, I was thinking about this because they're definitely similar in a lot of ways, but they're also super different in so many ways. So like,
yeah, that's
the
fair.
The Maverick feels like it is a truck that Ford took to the shrink ray and shrunk down to that size, right?
Took to the shrink ray.
Yeah, they have one of those in Dearborn. Have you seen it?
It's awesome. You know, I
I've seen it. It hit me like 25 years ago, and now I'm.
I wish it would now, hit me.
And now I'm stuck in this 5'6" you know, body of mine. So,
but yeah, the Santa Cruz feels like a Tucson with a bed on it. It is definitely a crossover. It's definitely not as functional, but it's nicer to drive, I think, by a little bit. The interior is a little better, has a little bit more finish. The technology is a little better. So it really depends what you want in that segment. But I think the Maverick still has the edge by a little bit.
Let me ask you this, because I've driven neither and I'm really keen to actually drive both. I envisioned the Santa Cruz as more of a like a street going kind of performance truck versus the Maverick feeling more like a something you wouldn't mind necessarily taking. Not like rock crawling, but venturing off road on a dirt road or like a two track or something. Is that kind of your takeaway?
Not really. I think the Santa Cruz drives very much like a Tucson, like a crossover.
Okay.
It doesn't feel sporty,
which isn't a bad thing.
Like, no, it's not a bad thing, but it's not like a sport truck like you're expecting.
Okay.
I think what would be cool if there was like an N line or an N version. That would be awesome.
Yeah, who the hell knows with Hyundai, because they pull out some things, but I totally see your point on that. If you beat it up a bit, but the engine sourced out of the Tucson is really strong. That truck pulls just fine. That crossover drives really nicely as well. We haven't seen any specific off-road trims of the Maverick yet too, so Ford's nowhere near done with this thing.
Yeah.
Well, how about we talk about the... Sorry, go ahead, Bruce.
No, it's just real quick. So what? The Tremor is on the way. The Maverick Tremor. We know that, which is going to be like a light version. But so there will be a something. And yeah, let's move on.
Yeah, I was going to move us on to Bronco so we can get on to the good stuff. Any real?
I've never heard of the Bronco. Can you tell me about it?
Well, you can't find one at dealers, so there's that.
Yeah. And if it's a burger 50, chain, more expensive.
I think it's a burger chain, like in the Denver's, like Southern Denver suburbs, maybe.
I think that's accurate as well. But utility, it was the Bronco, the Genesis GV70, and the Hyundai Ioniq 5, which we had kind of a debate in our chat earlier. Is the Ioniq 5 really a utility vehicle? It seems like me and John Neff basically agreed it should be a car. It should be a 5-door hatchback. In that it should be put in that category, but do you guys agree, disagree?
That's the only weird. I mean, Bronco definitely deserved to win that, but the Ioniq 5 being a utility is so weird. I think what it is that Hyundai classifies it as an SUV, I think, for EPA reasons and then just for like to sell it to consumers who don't know any better. But when you see it in person, which I've sat inside of it, it's a hatchback. Like, it's not even close
big,
to an
SUV. So it's bigger than you think it is hatchback. In photos.
Yeah, but it's not an SUV at all. So,
but
the Bronco's so interesting because, it's the best off-roader on sale right now. It does everything a little bit better than a Wrangler across the board. But this category is stupidly broad, honestly, because that if you recommend this to somebody who just likes the look of it and the off-road from time to time, but they're using it day to day and they have to go on the highway, they're going to drive it into a lake and not want to get out of the car because it's horrible to drive on the highway in terms of the wind noise that hits you in the face.
You also have minivans in this segment too, which is always weird to me. Like, how
that's
do you compare
crazy.
Bronco
You're comparing
to a Kia
too
Carnival?
Much.
Yeah.
It's so broad. It's a phenomenal vehicle, and it would be the first thing I would reach for to take on a trail out of anything that's new on sale today. However, living with one day to day, I think would be a tall order for most people shopping for a crossover.
All right. Before we move on real quick, Clint, when we were talking beforehand, you had some kind of opinions on NACTOY. Do you want to share that, or would you rather not? It's up to you.
No, I think that
do it.
Okay,
I'll share some opinions.
Okay, go for it.
There's a lot of really smart people who work for NACTOY, and there's a lot of really great journalists that we know well because we travel with them all the time that I've worked with before. But it feels like they're sort of still stuck one foot in the past a little bit, right? Because when you look at the semifinalists this year, there was an EV in every category, and you could argue like Bronco and Maverick totally deserve the award. Lucid, you could even say like Bolt, you could say some other little electric cars. Ioniq probably deserved to be a car, not utility. It feels like they're sort of stuck in their old ways a little bit. So I think that's the only thing sort of holding NACTOY back. And there are a few other reasons. I mean, the C8 Corvette thing a few years ago kind of soured me a little bit, whereas it was supposed to be in production, and then they said they're just going to waive it because it doesn't matter. So that was a whole thing. But
yeah, this is supposed to be the gold standard of awards in our industry. And sometimes I feel like it's not completely flushed out and completely sound with how they judge cars. Even as we've talked through it, the three categories that they offer is strange in how you score these things. I think the three vehicles chosen are great vehicles. Don't get that mistaken. But the vetting, the process to get there, to me, is a bit questionable.
So just me, I obviously I have nothing to do with NACTOY, but as an outsider looking at it, it almost feels like there should be more categories. And I understand why they have, you know, forever, for ages, it was just car and truck. There was nothing else. And then they added utility, I think in the last 10 years, maybe 12, something like that.
Yeah.
But that still feels so limiting in when you look at the entire breadth of the cars that are on sale in the United States. And like you said, when you only have those three categories, you have to shove stuff in there that doesn't really seem to fit.
No, you're absolutely right. With you, Bruce, as an outsider looking in, utility, that needs to be two categories, because like you said, Clint, a Bronco is going to drive completely different than, say, well, we'll go the other direction. Instead of Ioniq, we'll go the other direction and say Escalade, right? Technically, yeah. I mean, is anybody cross-shopping a Bronco with an Escalade?
I mean, you could even say Bronco and GV70. Has there been a single person that's looked at a GV70 and a Bronco and thought, yeah, do I want this one or this one? I don't think that human being exists.
GV70 is amazing at what it does. I mean, should have been. If we can go,
but it's not a Bronco. They're totally different vehicles. So.
Yeah, nobody's selling a GV70 for like $50,000 over sticker on eBay.
That too.
Yeah.
But speaking of the good and bad in the automotive world, the main reason we actually had Jeff and Clint join us today is to talk about our story that ran just before 2022, the best and worst cars that they drove of the year. So as anyone knows who looks at Motor One, we put up several reviews a week, often every bit of three, right, guys? Three or four. And so obviously there are cars that rise to the top and they're great, and there are cars that are not so great. And so our editors who drive that stuff, they kind of weighed in. I will get that pulled up here if you guys want to talk about that a little bit.
Here, I've got it ready to go, Bruce.
Oh, Superman, go for it.
I did have it ready to go. It just disappeared. What? Let's try this
2021 again. Seemed like a good year for cars. I'll start there. I had to actually think about the worst car I drove because there wasn't an immediate clunker that came to my mind. 2020 was an easy one for me. It was a Toyota Corolla Apex, which made me redefine the outlook of my life and how much I hated that car. But 2021, it was a harder process for me to go through. I guess we'll start there. Yes, that thing is a smile factory. And the review publishes Thursday.
You gotta tell us what it is, dude. You gotta tell us what it is because not everyone watches on YouTube.
I love
you. Should be watching
on Meet Audio Podcast.
An audio podcast.
Listeners on audio. Videos,
audio? So. What? Like 8 tracks and stuff? Mm-hmm. What is this old technology? No, Clint, if you go to YouTube, we're looking at Clint's section of the best and worst where he picked the Audi RS e-tron GT as the best car. Mr. Simone, go for it.
I love that car so much. Oh my God, it looks the business. It would be that right now. Like the way I actually started writing this article, not to quote myself here, but in this very cool job that we have, we're very often asked, okay, if you had all the money in the world, what would be the car that you buy? Right? And then
wait.
That's a good impression of consumers.
Who is that talking right now? Is that just like general
anybody?
People?
It's normally after a few glasses of wine at dinner, but it still holds true that so often I am asked like, okay, what's the best car? Like, what's your favorite car? And then I try not to quantify it a million different ways, but the plain old question, if you had all the money in the world, what car would you buy? And it would to use every day, you know, not going into hypercar territory, it would be this 1,000,000,000%, the Audi RS e-tron GT. It was my favorite car I drove all year. Nothing else came even close to it.
You so think let that me play devil's advocate point? Real quick. Isn't it just a Taycan turbo with a different body?
It's a Taycan turbo with a better looking body and better driving dynamics because it's different. It's because it's worse. Hold on. It's better because it's worse. Audi took the Porsche recipe here. And this is my words. Don't get it misconstrued with Jeff and anybody else who's like, but the Porsche drives better. Audi took the Porsche formula, dialed everything back like 10-20%, and the end result is that this is more comfortable to drive in everyday scenarios, and it's more fun to me in the canyons because the car is a little bit more reactive. It lets its hair down a bit more than the Porsche, which is very buttoned up because it's so effing good at everything it does.
So let me get this straight. It's worse looking than the Taycan.
It's better looking. You're wrong already.
It's worse to drive than the Taycan. And the interiors, is the interior better or worse?
The interior is better because there's only one screen in the middle. The Taycan has the extra screen. You have to go into a screen and hit 3 different buttons just to move the damn airflow out of the vent. The Audi has a real vent that you can just move left and right. It's a simple interior and it's not trying too hard, even though it's an electric spaceship.
You heard it here first, folks. Clint likes the Audi RS e-tron GT because it flows air better out of the vents in the interior.
It does. Anybody over... It is. It's not annoying. Anybody over 6 feet tall can't sit in the back of it. There's way too much, but it's true. It's a really, really harsh sloping roof line. The one we drove had a year one package, which was $21,000 and had carbon ceramic brakes and a whole bunch of crap you didn't need. But just like the Taycan kind of did before I drove this Audi, it's the car that I keep coming back to that makes me excited for the next generation of cars. It doesn't make me dread anything about EVs. It's hard to put into words how fast this thing is and how enjoyable it is to drive quick, to drive slow. In every scenario, it's a thrill.
Clint, let me just respectfully say, I don't think you have a future in auto sales, because if a customer walks up and you say, well, this one's worse than this one, but you should buy it. Oh, and if you're over 6 foot, you can't fit in the back. I don't think that's going to work. So
that's fine. Then for all the damn people that accuse me every week of being paid by manufacturers, then at least you know it's not true, because there's some con in every car that we drive. And this one has cons just like everything else. But the pros far and away outweigh the cons.
One question, and, you know, we rib, but hey, you're right. This is a really cool car. I like the car. I think it's cool. If you had that car, how long before you'd get tired of people asking why you didn't get the Porsche?
I don't care. I mean, anybody who buys a Lotus Evora, anybody who buys an Audi RS Q8, you have to ask them the same question. Sometimes it's okay to not buy a Porsche.
No, you're right. Very good. Very good. No, I think it's a good choice. I think it's a good choice. I'm fine. Yeah.
Do we want to do Clint's worst car, or do we want to do Jeff's best
let's,
car?
Let's do Clint's worst car since we're okay. scrolled
then right Then I'll just shut up and let him go for it.
All I got to do is scroll down. Look at this Nissan Armada, everybody. What's wrong with the Nissan Armada, Clint? Come on.
Jeff and I were together on that day in the middle of the Everglades where that photo was shot. I ended up taking that car on a road trip across southern Florida from Miami to the Gulf side. And I put a whole bunch of friends in it. I'm like, this thing is huge. It'll fit all of our luggage. It's a great road trip car. And then over the course of like 2.5 hours driving, it got worse and worse and worse and worse. And then at the end of it, you just realize that Nissan is making good cars these days. Finally, this is not one of them. This got a facelift for 2022 and they tried to bring it back to life. They updated the tech that's inside of it, but the bones of this thing, the interior quality, the way it drives, the outdated engine, the horrible inefficiency, it is 5 to 10 years behind everything else that it competes against.
How did it get worse as the miles went on though? Because did something break? What?
No, it's easy. Nothing broke on it, but you just realize the things that bother you. The blind spot monitoring was very, very, you know, it pinged at you all the time. And then the car is the size of a small house. It's huge. So if you're driving on a 2-lane highway and you go over one of the lanes, it jerks it back. And because it's so tall, it sends a shockwave through the entire chassis. Like it's just not refined at all. As soon as you hit the gas, the engine is really loud and gritty. There's a whole bunch of things I can hold against it that shouldn't happen in an SUV that's $70,000-$80,000.
When you were driving it, did anybody try to flag you down thinking that you were their Uber to the airport?
No, because, I mean,
there are a few of these out here and they all have like the, you know, just the little light up thing inside. And they're like Uber cars going back and forth to the airport, taking people back. I mean, that's the first thing I think of when I see on Armada now. I'm with you. They gave it a facelift, but even with a facelift, it looks like old. You know what
it
I mean?
It looks okay. But I mean, you know, even to make it less boring here, I don't think Jeff can either. I can't name one reason to buy that over anything that it competes against.
Or Pathfinder. The Pathfinder is great, and then they sell this, so it's confusing.
Pathfinder gets 3 rows. It's smaller, but not a ton when it comes to cargo space, usable passenger space. Armada is just too big of a car for today's world, and even if you do want a big, giant, massive, wasteful SUV, this is not the one to have.
Yeah.
That's what the Escalade is for.
Yeah. Right.
Honestly.
All right, Jeff, it's your turn.
Jeff, you're up.
Best car you drove this year.
Oh, boy. Well,
yeehaw.
For all the issues that I just gave Clint about the Audi, I'm sure he's going to have some opinions about this.
No, this one is fantastic. Good job.
You know, I really went back and looked at all the cars I drove this year, and it came down to 3 that I really liked. One was super obvious, the Porsche 911 GTS. Amazing. Like, the best driving car that I've driven this year. But that felt like too obvious of a choice and not like super interesting. And then I actually went to the Tundra, which I really, really liked, but I think I might have been in the minority there and really liking that truck for whatever reason. So it basically came down to this, the BMW iX, because, and this is really what sold me. It has the single best interior of any car on sale today, period. Like, that's it. For as many issues as BMW has had in the past decade or whatever, and I am super critical of BMWs because I know they can do stuff like this. And when you get in the iX, it's obvious, like, they really figured it out this time. Huge, huge central touchscreen, new iDrive infotainment, like, great materials, great layout. It's just the best interior you could buy of any car. And then you drive it, and I drove it in Germany, humble brag. It was awesome. Like, we drove in the Bavarian Alps. And it feels like an i3. Like, it doesn't feel as big as it looks. And the i3 was always a great little nimble, you know, SUV. And so it drives really, really well. I was actually really surprised by the iX.
But it's ugly, right?
Well, you know, it's, I think, you know what it is? And I think we've talked about it on this.
Don't say it has great personality.
I think BMW is going for the shock factor, per usual, with their big, huge kidneys. But I think one day they're going to have to get over that, and I think they're eventually going to figure out their design. But for now, yeah, it's a little hard on the eyes on the front. Right. The rest of it is great. I think the grill is what kills it.
I don't think the grill. I mean, I don't like it. I'll just say it. I don't like it. But I don't think the grill is as bad on the iX as it is on some other vehicles.
Yeah.
So that's not good.
Give me credit there. I didn't say it was not good. It's like, okay, you have the choice of having your thumb cut off or your pinky finger cut off. Neither's good, but take my pinky. So, you know, I still have a hand where I can use a joystick with, right? Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about with the kidney grill. I don't think it's there. I don't think it's terrible on here, though. I'm all right with your choice, Jeff. I got you on this.
Appreciate that. I mean, yeah, it's not terrible. I think the M3 or the M4 is worse with that kidney.
That upsets me just because the M4 is such an amazing car. And
yeah,
you have to acknowledge that it's an amazing car while still looking like that.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say I like all three of your choices, Jeff. I really do.
Oh,
I think that's a...
Appreciate that.
You kind of picked your own knack toy, and that's a nice three choices based off all the stuff that came out last year.
I'm going to call it the Jeff Toy Awards.
You should.
Jeff Toy. The Jeff Toy. The heard it here first, folks. The Jeff Toy Awards.
And the worst.
So what's the worst?
This was kind of a tough one because, I mean, there's no bad car on sale today. I think a lot of people will tell you that. There's really no car where you immediately drive and you're like, this is awful. I almost picked the QX55 with Brett because it's just a QX50 with a better design. But I think I like the design enough to sort of keep it out of my worst. So I ended up I ended up going with the Mini John Cooper Works convertible. I know this is going to like shock a lot of people because they love this car, like the way it drives, the way it sounds.
No one loves this car.
No, not even a Mini owner. I don't know. Maybe I'm.
You have JCW fans just like you have Mini fans. Yeah. I think that's fair to say.
I think Minis in general have like a good reputation for driving super well, right?
Okay, yeah. That's true. Yes.
So I think that's sort of why it might be kind of shocking. But this car was like $40,000, and it was not as good to drive as like a Veloster N or Civic Type R. The interior was way worse. No cargo space, like really harsh, really loud. And I know it's a convertible, but I mean, that doesn't really change my mind on it being harsh and loud. I think it still would have been as a coupe. So I don't know. It was just kind of a weird car that I didn't like this year or this past year.
So worst car you drove in 2021, please tell me that you didn't drive a Ford EcoSport. Because if you chose this over an EcoSport, we're going to have some words.
Did you drive a Mitsubishi Mirage this
year? Yeah, they do.
No, I didn't drive the Mirage, but I think the Mirage actually serves a purpose, if that makes any sense.
No, you're right, because it is incredibly cheap transportation for people that need that. Mm-hmm, whereas exactly. This is a $40,000 semi-hot, trying to be hot hatch.
Yeah.
That looks like it's still from 2004.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
meaning you need to update some styling.
Yeah,
anything else? Too. Anything else from you guys? Any freestyle stuff? I mean, we talked about here in your article, the article that that all of the editors did here at the end of the year. I mean, give us something a little unexpected here. How about this? What was a vehicle that surprised you the most this year? Not necessarily best or worst, but what surprised the hell out of you?
I say so. Brett Evans picked the Sonata N-Line as his best, and that probably would have been like a fourth or fifth for me. But what really surprised me about that car was that I drove the Sonata Hybrid first before I drove the N line, and that was a dull ass car. Like, that was such a boring car to drive. And then I got the Sonata N line, and I was like blown away by how genuinely sporty and good and awesome it was. It's like, think of the Veloster N, how good that is, and how much everybody loves that car. And this is like a quarter, somewhere like 3/4 of performance of that, right, mm-hmm. into a sedan. So it was really good. I was shocked by that car.
Okay, Clint,
that's cool, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so before you stick your tongues out at me, for me, the answer is actually the Cadillac Escalade. But let me say, going into it, I know it's a $100,000 SUV and it should be good for that money. But I don't like that type of vehicle. I think the American XS SUV is by and large worse than the European alternatives, and a bit more wasteful and a bit more loud and just unnecessarily big. Because if you just boil that down, I'd have a Range Rover over an Escalade any day of the week is what I thought going into driving the Escalade. And then I drove it for a week and was blown away by it. It had Super Cruise, which is just the coolest thing in the world to interact with and drive and actually take your hands off the wheel. That feels completely futuristic, even in 2022. The infotainment was wonderful to interact with. It was easy. You could plug in a destination in the nav and not have to go through 10 menu settings. The whole display in front of you as a driver has augmented reality. It has so many different things. And then the ride quality is just top tier in the industry, and a really nicely tuned V8 engine to back it up.
And if you're watching on YouTube, those pictures I took in the Smoky Mountains in Tennessee, and I drove the Escalade from Atlanta to Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. And I will totally agree with Clint that is a super comfortable, surprisingly great luxury vehicle. Like, I was blown away. So
I did that same drive several years ago in a 2004 Tahoe. Was not the best experience.
Yeah. Actually, and Chris, you remind me of something there. Normally people just say, oh, well, the Escalade is just like a dressed up Tahoe. Right. This current generation, there is a serious difference between the Escalade and the Tahoe. It's not just a badge job. They are very different vehicles, interior and beyond that. So Cadillac nailed this one. They really did.
Yep.
Yeah. Cool. Folks, go ahead, Bruce.
I had a question for our guests. So anyone who listened last week, we talked about what the automotive landscape of 2022, what was going to be happening. So off the top of your heads, I know we didn't really discuss this beforehand. Is there a vehicle you are most looking forward to seeing or driving in 2022? Jeff, you're closest to me, so you go first.
Well, assuming it doesn't get canceled, I'm supposed to drive the Kia EV6 at the end of the month.
Okay.
And I'm actually really excited by that, solely based on the way it looks, because I think it is like a really interesting looking car, and just knowing that Kia has been killing it lately with all their product. So I'm pretty excited by that one. In terms of debuts, I'd have to think about that one, but I know there's a lot of really good stuff coming out this year, especially electric stuff. So,
okay, Clint, go either way. Which, tell us what
Lightning.
Oh yeah, that's a good choice. Yeah.
Lightning for a bunch of different reasons. EV6 and Ioniq 5, though technically you could tie those to 2021 if you wanted to, but we will be driving them more thoroughly this year. And then for me, Lotus Emira. I think it's one of our last chances to say goodbye to like the automotive industry that we've known coming up to this point. And they had us the addition of an AMG four cylinder, which is going to be great, slightly more efficient too, but mostly just, I think it's going to be an absolute home run for that car. And as we transition into more EVs, sports car enthusiasts will still want something to cling onto. And I think that could be the answer.
That's a good answer. I have not thought about that one. Yeah.
We've been talking about that a lot, Bruce and I, as we've been going through the podcast, where we see something debut, you know, a new performance variant, and there's a pause because it's like, is this going to be the last one of this kind?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And, you get that feeling, don't you?
Yeah. Has
well, in some cases, we're hearing automakers confirm it. Like Civic Type R, for example, they're saying that is going to be the last Civic Type R with no hybrid assistance, no electrification of any kind.
Put some pressure on that car, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But that's not the only thing, one I'm though. Hearing that about. That's just the first one that came to my head. But yeah.
Well, folks, what are some of the great cars you drove in 2021? You know what to do. Email us, podcast@motorone.com. You can always comment on our YouTube video. You can always comment on the article that goes up at motorone.com every Friday. And we haven't done this for a while just because we've had some special episodes. But before we move on to Tokyo Auto Salon, Bruce, can we take a few moments and go over just some comments that we've had over the last few weeks? Because we have had some comments. We appreciate all of the warm wishes for the holiday season that we received.
We did see that. That was nice.
But we do have a few comments that that are worth kind of going over here. We'll start here from our New Year podcast, which was right at the very end of the year. There was a commenter in there, TL Stanbro, that said, "How will the electric trucks work at job sites when it's 20 below and you want to run the heaters for 2 hours? How are the batteries going to hold up for that?" And if I remember correctly, we were talking about, I think that was the a Silverado EV preview that we were talking about on that one. Is that right, Bruce? Am I remembering correctly?
I can't remember if it was us talking about Lightning. Actually, I think it was us talking about Lightning, and I was making my point. Yeah, that my dad and my uncle both have construction work experience, and I was talking about how, hey, you can, since the Lightning, you could plug multiple electric vehicles into it. You could say, hey, you're going here, plug into my truck. I only have 10 miles, you got 30 miles, take some of my range, blah, blah, blah. That's what it came from.
Yeah, and obviously we appreciate the comments. Thank you very much for commenting. I mean, it's a legit question. I'll answer the question with a question. How will your diesel truck start up when it's 20 below at the job site and the fuel has gelled? I mean, there are always going to be circumstances that are going to be more difficult than others for different vehicles.
I was the person that responded to this question from our account on YouTube. And I said, right now, he's probably has a point. That is not a great situation for EVs. But EVs in the commercial market like that, they're going to be slow to take off. And they're probably going to take off places where whatever company that is buying them sees a use case for them. So you may be in the Southwest or just the South in general, not places that are getting negative 20 degree weather, because that's just a crappy situation for batteries.
And well, negative 20 is a crappy situation for any vehicle. And I mean, and any vehicle person has a battery or a person. Yeah. I mean, gosh, I just went through a spat of minus 10, minus 15 here in Western South Dakota. I've got a battery in the Mazda that's less than a year old, and it was a little sketchy starting after 8 hours outside. So, I mean, there are always going to be circumstances where some vehicles are better than others.
Sure.
I understand the point here. It's like, well, EVs just don't work. Well, they do work. They just don't work in every circumstance, but there are circumstances where gas cars don't necessarily work. There are circumstances where diesel cars don't necessarily work. And hey, we have to start somewhere, right? We're at the beginning of this road, and the way we're seeing things evolve, I mean, I think in 5 or 10 years, stuff like this is going to be a non-issue with EVs. I honestly think that way. Let's see what else we got. Josiah is a faithful listener. We got to chime in here. Great episode, guys. This is from our New Year's podcast. Hope you enjoyed your holidays. I did. And I think Bruce, you did. Jeff and Clint, I'm sure you guys did all right. Josiah says, I liked this look back on 2021. It was a pretty good year for the car industry. I had a few debuts that impressed me. The Countach was one of them, not alone. Looks really stylish, and I honestly don't think they could have done much better with the modernization. It needed the big wing, but hey, that's okay. There are a lot of people that didn't want it. That it shares largely with the Aventador doesn't bother me much. The Countach is a small volume product, and the Aventador was always a world-class supercar. The Mercedes SL and Nissan Z were also sports cars that returned with terrific styling. Josiah, you want to go to MotorOne.com. Our managing editor, Brandon Turkus, just put up a first drive on the Mercedes AMG SL. That's a really good read, and it sounds like it's a really amazing car. The Corvette Z06 is going to be a hit, as it will offer unbelievable performance and style attached to a reasonable price tag. My final opinion on the Integra.
He's given us many opinions.
Is that Acura could have and should have done more differentiating from the Civic, but when it all comes down to it, we have an Acura that looks hot and is basically a Civic Si, a terrific driver's car. The best thing to happen this year, however, was discovering this podcast. Awesome, thank guys. Thank you very much for commenting. Yeah, we won't go over Integra again. I hope that when it comes out, it's cooler than I think.
Our guests have not given their Integra opinions. So,
okay,
please, Jeff, Clint, quick
30 please. Seconds. Go.
Oh, boy. I think I did.
Did you? Okay, maybe you did. I don't think Jeff has.
My opinion is that I need to drive it. I don't like the way it looks. I don't like the graphics. I don't think it's very heritage inspired, as they're trying to play it off as, but I just need to drive it. So
they didn't show us anything about the way it looked. And I was at the event when they pulled the cover off and they're really excited. And we were the first appointment where they cleared off the stage for us to go film with it. So I literally hadn't seen the car until we started filming and we're talking and filming in real time. And then I get around to the rear three quarter and went like, oh, shit, okay. Like the front of the car looks good. The side profile and rear three quarter, I like break my heart. It could have been a lot better looking. And honestly, the Civic hatch is better looking than the interior. The Civic is better looking than the Integra. It doesn't bother me that it's a Civic. That means a lot of good things. I think they could have done a little bit more to make it look better. Totally Team Jeff on this one. Let's wait to drive it and see what we think then.
I think that's a good philosophy to take. I'm gonna curtail my Integra critiques until I have a chance to drive it, because who knows? I could end up with just the biggest foot in my mouth of all time.
Yeah, anyone who listens to this show has heard lots of Integra opinions. We still have not seen the interior. The interior, who knows? It could be the greatest thing since sliced bread. The engine, who knows? It could be fantastic. Smith and I, we just don't love the
and it could just be an SI with an Acura badge, but
it could be that too.
Let's grab a couple more comments here really quick. This is from a few weeks ago when we were talking about Toyota's big like EV shotgun debut where they dropped 15 concepts all at once. Yep. Benny Jolin writes, Toyota never ceases to raise my eyebrows. I don't remember which article I read. Hopefully it was one at Motor One, but I remember it talking about Toyota betting on hydrogen as opposed to EVs. I think I know what you're talking about. They were certainly betting on that. They were more than willing to throw a Mirai at anyone who thought they wanted one. So that is a possible theory. My own personal theory about Toyota's 15 concept reveal in particular is that I'd say two or three of those cars are already getting ready to enter production. Then two or three other concepts that generate the biggest hype may be considered. I really can't think of another good reason why Toyota would shotgun 15 concepts all at once. Great show as always. Looking forward to the next shot of hot sauce. Yes, the next shot of hot sauce will come once we get to 1,000 subscribers. We're going to stick with that.
I think we'll talk about that later, but
we'll talk about that later.
This is a really good comment though. That's exactly my opinion. Two or three of them are certainly on the way. Two or three of them, they were probably looking at things and the rest aren't going to happen. The fact that they showed two Lexus electric wagon concepts, Lexus probably isn't going to make one electric wagon, let alone two.
Those look so
sure good. They will. They just won't sell it in America.
Well, they'll be called crossovers.
Yeah, it was the Toyota thing was basically Danny Behar Lotus 2.0. Remember that a few years ago when Lotus had like 10 concepts?
That was like 10 years ago now, bud.
Was it 10 years ago? Oh my god.
It was 2011.
Yeah, they debuted like
don't look it up, Bruce. I don't want to know that it's 2022 yet. That was only like a couple years ago. Yeah. I'm going to live in my happy world. One more comment here on that same podcast where we talked about Toyota. We also talked about the new Shelby GT500 KR. So F4C Garage writes, with regards to the Toyota debut, was a pure PR stunt and it wasn't even that good. Ouch. Right to the point. I like it. As far as the Shelby GT500 KR, buy two of them if you have the means. Buying two would set you back, I think, almost 300 grand. So That's two Mustangs for 300 grand. I'm a Mustang guy, but you could beat up on one and keep the other as an investment. They are only going to go up in value. Speaking as somebody that was working at Ford Performance when the 07 Shelby GT500 first came back out. In fact, if you called the Ford Performance Info Center, you may have talked to me. I had a lot of callers saying, yeah, I'm getting this 07. I can't believe they're bringing the Shelby back. I'm going to park it in my garage. They're only going to do it for a year or two. And it's going to, in Barrett Jackson, you know, I'm planning to sell it for like 150 grand. And we kind of know what happened there. I mean, you can, an 07 GT500 still isn't like, you know, $5,000, but it's not hard to look around and find that, yeah. that 07 to 09 before they change the styling. It's not hard to find them. Pretty reasonable. Will the new KR go that route? Will it go a different route? Hard to say. This time it's being done, I mean, from what I gather, all through Shelby. There's no specific Ford involvement. But either way, I think it's a cool car, and thank you very much for commenting. So once again, comment on our podcast, Motor One Podcast YouTube channel. You can comment there. You can comment on our articles. You can email us podcast. Let's talk about Tokyo Auto Salon here before we head out of this evening.
Yeah, we'll do a quick preview here of just, so we've actually seen several of the vehicles that are coming. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pop this up here real quick. We just today, as of this recording, saw the revival of the Mitsubishi Rally Art.
Really sad.
Well, there were two of them.
Thumbs up for me.
Thumbs up.
Jeff, I'm on your side on this one, and it's a rare day, but I like these.
Look at that.
Yeah. It looks cool, but Rally R was supposed to be not just about looks.
That's yeah, true. But Mitsubishi threw that out the window with the Eclipse SUV, so it's all downhill from here. It doesn't matter. Like, just put some Rally R stuff on an Outlander and call it a day. That's all. Awesome.
Call it a day.
Good enough. It's 2022. We're going electric anyway. It's
look at show me the back, please.
Yep. Just full back.
No, so this is the Mitsubishi Vision Rally Art concept. It's basically it's an Outlander with a body kit, right?
Yeah,
it's electric, I mean, right? There's no exhost pipes.
Maybe I don't know.
I don't think it's was a concept, spelled out.
So.
Yeah, I mean it's a concept. I don't think it was spelled out specifically whether it's
They didn't say one way or another.
It's like a damn Grand Cherokee.
Well, and if it was electric, you know, they would have been, hey, check out our new electric vehicle content. You know, probably not. It has bigger. They upgrade the brakes on it, don't they, Bruce?
I think it's just the body kit, dude. Yeah, 22-inch wheels.
Just a body kit.
Oh no, it does have larger brake rotors with 6-piston calipers. Sorry,
okay, there we go.
I missed that
for that lack of extra power that it has.
No, yeah, it's no extra power. The brakes are the only mechanical upgrade other than the body kit.
But who knows how much weight they added from the body kit? You need to slow that stuff down, man.
Or anyways. Oh,
yeah, with that rogue powertrain, that thing is a missile.
Here's something we should actually get excited about. Subaru is going to show an electric STI.
Should we get excited?
Well, yeah, because if they do it right, then it's going to be great. If it ever comes to production, which probably won't happen, but...
Yeah, it will eventually. You guys are burying the lead here. There are two cars that I'm like dying to talk about, and it's not this one.
It's called Suspense, Clint.
Yeah.
You don't start the show with a showstopper.
Well, listen, right. I'll say that Subaru literally has, after driving the new WRX, Subaru literally has nothing to lose by building this, because... they are in a bad place right now. So let's hope that this is way better than what they're doing now.
Smith and I have mentioned that. And real quick, so we are recording this on Tuesday. These vehicles might have debuted by the time this post goes up, because the post will go up on the 14th and the show starts on the 14th. Mm-hmm. So it is entirely possible that we are speaking in the past and some cool stuff will actually be there by the time we rate this post. But the other one, I don't know. Clint said there are two cool ones coming. I don't know if this is what he was referring to. This is the Toyota GT3 concept. Is this what you're referring to, Clint?
No.
No? This is cool as hell.
You're not waiting for the Daihatsu, are you?
No.
The Nissan? That's the only one left I have.
What do you want?
Toyota is doing a GRMN version of the Yaris that's going to be production.
That's right here. It's the same post.
Post. Yeah.
It's buried with the other stupid thing. I don't care about the Supra. Look at that.
That's not a Supra.
Whatever it was.
We don't know what it is. That's what makes it cool.
It looks like an AMG GT.
I was just going to say it does.
But it's a Toyota, apparently.
The theory is, and yeah, I mean, as you're listening to the podcast on Friday, you probably know more about this car than the Chris's from 3 days ago. Yeah. Because we're still left in the dark. We don't have any information thus far. The theory that we have going right now, it's going to be some sort of track-only car. And I got to be honest, Bruce, I get a little bit of Toyota 2000 GT vibe from it. If we go
that
back
super
up.
Super long hood and those front fenders.
It's cool. The long hood. It's if cool. You look really close at the headlights, I get a sense that there might be some round headlights up in there.
A little bit more angular to me, but still,
if Toyota wants to pull out some heartstrings
here, I'm on board.
I think it looks cool.
And with the way the back slopes, I love the 2000 GT. I'm a tremendous 2000 GT fan, and I get shades of 2000 GT in there. But yes, the Yaris,
your hotter Yaris, which we've seen.
Yaris Grimmin. That's exciting.
Yes.
Wait, but why do you care so much? We're not going to get it in the U.S.
We'll get the GR Corolla.
We'll get the GR Corolla, and then they'll do probably a faster, hotter version of it. And some of this will be integrated into that. I mean, that's a full-on rally homologation car. As car enthusiasts, we're supposed to bow down and worship that. It's awesome.
Now, I'm going to be selfish because we don't get in the U.S. Nobody else deserves it. So,
okay, well, you're dumb. But the most important car of the entire Tokyo Auto Salon is the Honda Civic Type R prototype.
Okay. Well, here,
we're not learning anything new about it though. They're just gonna have it there so people can look at it and
we get to see what it looks like, and everybody's so excited about it. We've already said that it's gonna be the last sort of like normal Type R as we know it. It's finally happening.
It's not supposed to debut. It's gonna just be there in its prototype form with the camo wrap on it.
Yeah, but Honda prototypes are basically the final car. We've played this game with Civic a few different times in the last couple of years.
Right. But with all the teasers, I mean, unless you guys know something more than I do, and it's extremely likely because I'm ridiculous, Honda isn't gonna show it necessarily anything new, are they?
They're going to have a video of it driving. I know that.
They're going to have it in public where people can see it, as we're seeing it here on Motor One Podcast YouTube channel. I mean, I'm excited for it.
My lukewarm take is that it's not going to be much better than the outgoing one. I think it's just.
But is that a problem?
No, I think it's still going to be good. But if we're expecting it to be like this huge explosion of awesomeness before they go to, you know, hybridization, I don't think that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, but you're saying it's going to be as good as the best front-wheel drive car in the world. That's a good thing.
Well, I don't know.
No, it should be better.
This is better than a Veloster. Civic Type R is better than a Veloster.
It should be a little bit better. Here's the thing. Bruce and I actually talked about this previously with the Type R. Was it last week? Was it last week or was it last month? Okay. Yeah, time is... it's 2022, man.
It was last week's episode. It might have been last month recorded. But it was last week's episode.
I mean... Do you drop like a turbo or you drop a bigger turbo and go 400 horsepower to the front wheel drive, or do you just bump it up just maybe a little bit and you spend a lot more time tuning the suspension to make it?
Yeah, it's Honda. It could have less horsepower than before.
I think it conceivably could, and that would be a terrific mistake, kind of like they did with the SI. They should have bumped that up a little. Should have bumped it up a little bit. Honda, if you're listening, for God's sakes, do not cut power on the Type R. This is going to be the last one. Don't go 400 horsepower. I've driven 400 horsepower front-wheel drive cars before. It's hilarious fun for like 10 minutes, and that's it. And then you realize, I can't steer. I can't see through my own cloud of tire smoke. You don't want to do that. But you know what? If you bump it up 10, 15 horsepower, maybe retune it so the power comes in a little bit lower. Spend some time on the suspension to dial it in even tighter. Who cares if it rides like a brick? It's going to be the last Type R. Make it ride like a brick, and then make it do a Nürburgring lap in like what? What's the current record? Like 7:30 or something for front wheel drive?
I don't know. In the teens, but
it's fast. You know, so they'll put sticky Michelins on it. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. That should be. I mean, hey, I'm excited to see that too. I hope Honda does something a little bit more with the Type R than just show the camouflage prototype. But I gotta jump back with Clint with the GR Yaris. I am so stoked and excited to see Toyota getting like back into performance again after the 90s, where you had like the Celica GT4 and everything that they were doing in WRC and the Supra. And then it was just like, nope, we're just going to build Camrys and Avalons and Ravs, and that's going to be it. So even if it's not coming here, the fact that it still exists elsewhere, that's enough to have me excited and happy. And if we get a GR Corolla, even better, because we'll get the GR. So we just put a little more in the GR and we'll have an awesome Corolla. And it's all happening because of the Yaris.
Last one. Also at Tokyo Auto Salon, we're going to see a one-off new Nissan Z with retro styling. Right now, we have no idea what that means.
It's like it's already retro.
Well, the whole car has retro styling. They're just stoking the fire before it goes on sale. Good for them.
But here's what I'm guessing. Smith and I, we were talking about this earlier. I think they're going to do a BRE style livery on it. Like they did it here. If you're watching on YouTube, you
that see
a 370Z and a 240Z. That seems like the natural thing to do. If you're doing a retro style version, it's going to look right. If it's just a cool paint job, I'm fine with that. It's just a one-off. It's not like something people are going to be able to buy anyway.
A one-off with an old livery on that, some different wheels that maybe have a more of a retro vibe.
Yeah.
That'd be all right. I'd be all right with that.
Well, I want to drive that damn thing already. Feels like they've been showing it for
a while. I know, I do. But remember the Supra? Oh, my God. All the preamble before the Supra.
The Supra, yeah.
Well,
I don't think Nissan's been as bad as Toyota was with the Supra.
They've not. No.
Yeah,
but I think that's our show for this evening. Clint, you go first. Is there anything you'd like to promote? Any social media, any sites, anything?
Yeah, anybody who's listening, we always love it when you head over to the Motor One YouTube channel. We have reviews going up every week at this point and some exciting stuff coming up. We have the Escalade review that I mentioned earlier is posting next week. We have the Audi RS e-tron GT is actually posting on Thursday. So a lot of great stuff to look forward to on our YouTube channel.
Jeff, how about you?
Yeah, if you go to follow us on social at Motor1.com on Twitter and Instagram, and if you're lucky, I will respond to one of your terrible comments on Instagram.
And if you're luckier, he won't.
Yeah. Jeff is killing it on Instagram, and I mean, if you just like cool car photos and stuff, I mean, that's the place to be. So definitely want to check that.
Well, Jeff might not respond to you on Instagram, but if you comment on Motor1 podcast on any video there, you can be sure I will respond to you. Sometimes I'll disagree with you, but I respond to everything.
And I promise I will try more. I'm a little busy, but I will be there.
So yeah, Motor One Podcast on YouTube is where to find us. Motor One Podcast, like I said earlier, on all the podcast platforms. You are at YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and every basically other service available. You can find us there. Smith, you go real quick and then I'll finish this out.
Yeah, I mean, you can catch me on Twitter at CH Writing. Of course, we're writing, Bruce and I are writing news stories for Motor One every single day. You want to go to Motor1.com to make sure you keep track of all the latest automotive news. And a big shout out, thank you to Jeff and Clint, you guys joining us on the show. You two are awesome. We're looking forward to having you back. Lots more. It's going to be a great year, I think, for the podcast. And Bruce, I think it's that time.
Yep. Real quick, if you've made it this far, you are clearly a fan of the show. And so if you've made it this far, I'm going to ask if we want to have more guests on in 2022. So if there's a guest that you want to see, you think we should have on, but either email it to us at podcast@motor1.com or put it in a comment to the video or something like that, because I would love to hear it and we'll see what we can do. But other than that, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We appreciate everyone who listens, everyone who comments, everything. Everyone who takes the time out of your day to listen to us blabber about cars. That's important, and we like that. So thank you for spending time with us. We enjoyed spending time with you, and good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.